Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and super excited to recap the Istria 110K on this episode, which is the race that I did last week in Croatia, and I have a load of takeaways from this race. This race, when I think about all the lessons that I learned, the experiences that I gained in this race, they were absolutely just so valuable, and one of the reasons why I did this race is not only a tune-up for Cocodona, but was also to gain new experiences, try out new mental strategies. One of those mental strategies, by the way, is the most powerful mental strategy I ever deployed in an ultramarathon. So we'll go over that and how it can help you in an ultramarathon. But also, I learned about racing internationally. I learned about racing tired with jet lag and really pushing when the body was not wanting to cooperate, which is great training for Cocodona. And in the end of the day, too, a lot of lessons and takeaways that are going to help you to master your next race when it comes to running an ultramarathon. So we're going to cover a lot. We're going to cover my strategy for the race. We're going to cover my mental strategy that I deployed that was really game-changing for me. I'm going to cover, you know, how to implement, tune-up races like Istria for me for Cocodona, so you can think about placing tune-up races in strategically for your big ultra marathon that you have up. And we're going to give a play-by-play of the day as well, along with a lot of recaps and tips and takeaways. So this is going to be an amazing episode. Now, before we dive into the ins and outs of the episode, I want to talk about a product that I used during Istria 110K that was a game changer for me in the race as well, because it helped me to battle tons of muscle soreness and fatigue out there. So as I'll go into, I went into Istria 110K not fresh at all, and that was on purpose. I'd ran about 100 miles in the week before leading up to Istria 110K, and then also too, I did not get much sleep on the plane going over, and I was jet lagged and just overall fatigued. And during an ultra marathon, you need to make sure that your muscles are primed and ready to go. And one product that I've been using that has helped my muscles to really perform well despite being fatigued and sore is a new spray technology called Play On Relief. Now, Play On Pain Relief is a topical cooling and pain relief spray that you can spray right on your muscles, and it will relieve soreness in a matter of seconds. And the way that it does that is it not only cools the top of the skin, but it goes deeper inside the muscles into the actual muscles and joints where the inflammation is happening and helps to relieve it at the deepest source as well. So I sprayed this on right before I went out into the race. I sprayed this on midway through the race when I had to make the push, and the soreness in my legs went away in seconds. And not only did it go away in seconds during this specific race, but it has also been a staple in my training for Cocodona 250. And I haven't felt virtually rarely any soreness throughout the entire process, and I credit a lot of it to using Play On Relief. And, you know, not having sore muscles not only allows you to perform better when you're on your long runs, but it also allows you to recover better so you can get back out to train at your full potential for your next ultra marathon. It comes in a bottle that's easily portable. You can spray it on super easily. You don't have to rub it on either, so there's no mess. And it's more effective than CBD creams, Icy Hot, all those kind of things as well, because those kind of stuff, not only are they not really natural products, but also too, they attack the pain only on the skin level, where this actually goes deeper as well. So Play On Relief is all natural. It has no crappy ingredients in it, and it's super, super effective. So if you want to try out Play On, you can get 20% off your next bottle of Play On Relief by going to playonrelief.com or go to the link in the show notes and use code EverydayUltra at checkout for 20% off your order. That's 20% off your order with code EverydayUltra when you go to the link in the show notes, or go to playonrelief.com and get your bottle of Play On. It's super cheap too, by the way, and it will last you about like a month too. So I think it comes out to, you know, just under $30, and that gives you a month's supply worth of Play On to have your legs fresh and ready to go. And I highly recommend this product. It's been like one of my favorites and an absolute staple of mine in Cocodona training. So hope you try it out, and Play On, everybody. All right, now let's get into this Istria 110K recap. By the way, I just got back from Europe 2 days ago, so I'm still on European time here, but we're doing well. We're powered by a lot of caffeine. We're getting in some good sleep and getting back into the swing of things. So I'm excited to dive into this race with Istria 110K. So I guess talking about the reasoning for it first. I'll talk about the reasoning. I'll talk a little bit about the race too, some of the specs in there as well, kind of like my intent and strategy going into it. But I want to lay out the land in terms of Istria 110K and the strategy for it first and foremost, and the reasoning why I picked this specific race, especially in Croatia. And the reason why I picked this race is something that I suggest a lot of people, including yourself, to do when you think about picking specific races. And there's kind of two ways that you can go about it. There is, do I want to learn new experiences in my ultra running career in terms of trying to, you know, race somewhere new or learn something or gain a new experience? Is there something that I want to learn? Because I truly believe that as an ultramarathon athlete, one of the best ways that you can continue to improve is to be a continuous student of the sport. Like, and that's, you know, listening to podcasts, that's, you know, doing research, that's, you know, maybe hiring a coach that you can learn from. And it's even racing in new types of races that you aren't used to. So if you are more used to like the flatter and faster kind of running, you might want to dive into a mountain ultra marathon. If you are, you know, more used to running on the East Coast trails, you might want to do a West Coast race, right? If you're more used to the desert trails, you might want to go to an East Coast race, right? If you are racing in the US, you might want to go over and race in Europe. So I always like to say, have at least one race a year or one race every 2 years that is out of your comfort zone a little bit, where you can gain new experiences, because that does one of two things. Not only, number one, do you learn new things based on the new experiences, how to race on new terrain, how to gain those things as well, but at the same time, you might find that there's something interesting for you that you didn't even realize that you would think is interesting. Like, I mean, even for me, I had never raced in Europe before, and after this race, like, I am totally hooked on the concept of racing in Europe. Like, it was just a cool experience, and I didn't expect that at all. And now I've kind of experienced it firsthand, and I'm excited to get back more. And that was something that I didn't think that I would be, like, so enamored by. And so when you put yourself in new situations, you might not think off the bat, like, you know, because it might not be a race that you're going to pick right off the bat, but after you do it, you might find out and realize, oh wow, I really love this thing. And I truly think that one of the biggest things that you can do as an ultramarathon athlete is to just try a bunch of things, not only to learn new experiences, but to see what you like, right? Because you might be racing in 100 miles, you know, you might do like a few hundred milers, but then, you know, you never know if you like 200 miles, or if you've never done a 50 miler, let's just say you've done a 50K and went straight to 100 miler and you do a 50 miler, you might find that you like that distance better. And I always say it's one of those things where it's impossible to know whether you truly like something if you don't actually try it. And I truly think in the world of ultramarathoning, where we have such a unique array of races and experiences and distances to do, to try as much things as possible, because yeah, you can really find out like what you really love in the end of the day. And if you go through it and do it and you find out you don't like it, then great, you have new information too. So that is one thing that I think is just really, really important for people to do. So that's the one intent that you can do. And then the second intent is, when you're picking races, that is you can hone in on a specific skill that you've worked on. So like for me, when I'm picking races, like I'm doing Javelina for the third time this year, that's one of those things where it's like, okay, I've learned, you know, over the past 2 years of doing Javelina 100 and training for these kind of races, a lot of things as well. Now I want to like hone in on the mastery side of things. So there's kind of two ways that you can pick races. It's number one, do I want to learn and, you know, dive into a new experience and, you know, just push myself out of my comfort zone and learn and gain the new experience? Or the second thing is, do I want to hone in and apply the skills that I've learned on, right? And like really, you know, get specific and learn the mastery of a specific race or a specific distance or a specific type of race in there as well, right? And it could be a combination of both things too. But I always think like those are the two lens of things that you can do when picking your race schedule. And I always suggest having a mix of both of those things or optimizing for one or the other. And I truly believe that earlier in your career, ultra running career, obviously it's better to focus on the discovery phase, so that first attempt, and then you know, as you kind of get later into your ultra running career, or you know, the more the experience that you get, that's where you can have a lot more of those opportunities to do that second thing where it's honing in on a skill. But nonetheless, for Istria 110K, yes, it was honestly a little bit of both, but where I really started to get from it, because kind of zooming out a bit, like this was a tune-up race for Cocodona 250. And I knew I wanted to do a 100K race before Cocodona as like a tune-up race, because I thought, okay, like about 60 to 70 miles is a great distance to kind of run for and train for Cocodona. And I wanted to get into a race setting where I can, you know, really just deploy my skills and get that tune-up race setting. And the time frame that I wanted to do it was about a month before Cocodona. So I looked at the races, and there were some other races, you know, around that time frame, especially in the US, right? Gorge Waterfalls, Lake Sonoma, Zion, tons of races that I could have done in the US. But I saw, you know, when I was looking at different races, Istria 110K in April, around this time frame, but it was in Croatia. And I thought about it a little more, and there's a few different things that I wanted to experience this for. Like, number one, first and foremost, I really wanted to experience, you know, racing internationally. I've never raced international before. I'd raced as far as Hawaii before, but I've never raced international in another country. So I really wanted to gain that experience. And, you know, as myself being an ultra running coach, I really wanted to dive into that experience so I can help more people who want to race internationally, to give them tips to do so. So I said, okay, like, and that's another reason why I want to do Cocodona 250 too. I've never done 200 plus miles before, and I want to help other people to do 200 plus miles on this podcast and also one-on-one coaching. And so I said, okay, like, let me do Cocodona to gain that new experience. And so in that build too, I said, let me gain the experience of racing internationally and getting that done too. Also, this race had a decent amount of climbing. It had about 14,000 feet of elevation gain over 68 miles. And for me, I definitely have honed in a little bit more on the flatter stuff as well. And I said, okay, this will be a good opportunity to get a little bit out of my comfort zone and use some climbing in there, which will be great. It's another reason why I also signed up for Ouray 100 later this year, or Ouray 100, whatever the pronunciation is. I think it's Ouray. I think hard U. Someone told me hard U is the way. So Ouray 100 later this year, which is 40,000 feet of elevation climbing. I think actually 42,000 feet of elevation climbing in 100 miles, which is more than Cocodona. And that's extremely out of my comfort zone, but I want to gain the new experience. So that was kind of like my intent with that as well. I also thought about, you know, and this is a good thing to think about when you're thinking about tune-up races for your next ultra marathon, is how can I accomplish the goals that I really want to work on, you know, leading into a specific race in a tune-up race itself. So when I'm looking at Cocodona, right, what are the big things that I really wanted to work on? And the things that I wanted to work on, and I also suggest these are things that anyone works on when they're, you know, training for a 200-mile race, is number one, I really needed to practice being in that pain and suffering cave. And although I've never experienced personally what it's like and what it feels like to be over 100 miles in an ultra marathon, running multiple 100 milers by now, I know that those have been hard. Like, all three of them that I've done, like, they're difficult. Like, there hasn't been an 100 miler that I've done that's like, wow, that was easy. And even so, you know, running 100Ks and stuff, like, that stuff's tough too. And so in my mind, I just know the gargantuan task ahead with 200 plus miles, 250 miles to be exact, at Cocodona, that's going to require a lot of mental strength for me to do so. So I wanted to practice a little bit more of the mental kind of side of things too. So looking at, you know, a potential of getting on a plane, flying, you know, with 15 plus hours of travel, getting a little bit jet lagged, being in an unfamiliar situation, like all this stuff as well, like, would culminate into a little bit more mental fatigue on my end. Then I thought about crafting it in a way too, where I said, like, hey, I can really exponate my mental suffering in this. And because, like, the thing with this was, I had a lot more variables in play, which I'll go into a little bit deeper as well. I don't want to dive into too much on that, but I knew that there would be more of an element of mental suffering in this kind of race, doing it internationally, just because of, like, the jet lag and the tiredness and the fatigue and all that stuff as well, being over there too. So I knew that racing internationally would be a big, big way to do so, like, and to get that done too. So all that being said, like, I wanted to gain a new experience. I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. I really wanted to practice the mental suffering that goes into an ultra marathon, especially in 200 miles, and get a really solid training run in for Istria 110, for Cocodona by doing Istria, that is. Training run for Cocodona by doing Istria. That's the right way, Joe. Like, that's the right syntax. But that was kind of the big reasoning of why I wanted to specifically pick this race over, you know, a US race that was closer at the same distance as well. And I highly suggest that, you know, when you're looking at different races as a tune-up race for your big race, is think about like, what are the things that are going to help me accomplish my goals the best while also doing either one or two, gaining new experience, or two, honing in on skills that I've learned to help me to get to where I want to be, you know, not just for the race that I'm training for, but in the future as well. So those are some things to consider when you're looking at a tune-up race itself. Now, with Istria 110K, looking at the specific strategy for the race, and I've covered this on multiple podcasts, so I won't go too deep on it, but when you're looking at a specific tune-up race, there's kind of two ways that you can approach it. Number one is you can race it to your fullest extent by doing a traditional taper period and a recovery period where you're going to the race fresh and racing it like all out in terms of like the distance at that effort. So like for Istria, if you were going into it in that scenario, it would be like, I'm racing Istria 110K as if it was, you know, a race, because I want to just test my fitness, and it can just be a good gut check on like where you are from a fitness perspective. Or the second thing is, let me approach this tune-up race as just a simple training run for my given race itself. And so generally, if you're seeing it as a training run, you're doing one or two things. You're doing it in terms of, you know, just being able to race it as you would like a specific long run, or you're racing it in the kind of context of, if I race this race, I want my goal to feel like I can keep going for the remaining distance of the race that I'm going for. So for example, if I were to race that way at Istria 110K, which is about 69 miles, so to say, I would say my goal would be, okay, at the end of this, I want to feel like I can go, you know, for another 180 miles, right? Because that'll be the rest of Cocodona. But for me, it was more so kind of treating this as more of a long run, because it's really hard to do that for a 200 mile race. If you're running 100 miles, I think it's a little bit easier to kind of gauge, just because it's longer and you can kind of like go at the pace a little bit more for 200 miles and that as well. But I really wanted to more focus on it being a long run in this scenario as well. Plus two, like I mentioned before, I really wanted to practice the mental suffering. And kind of where I came on this conclusion is when I looked at my entire training block, and I had done, you know, Elephant Mountain 50K, I had done the training camp, I had done, you know, tons of pretty long runs in my training as well, but I hadn't gotten to the place where I was really, really mentally suffering, like in that deep pain cave where it's just, you know, so dark and you have to get yourself out of there and you have to chip through it and you have to dig deep to really find yourself and keep moving forward, right? We've all been there in the middle of an ultra marathon when that voice in the back of our head is really, really loud. And I hadn't practiced that before, or I shouldn't say practiced it, but I hadn't experienced it in this training block. And the last time I really experienced that was Javelin 100 in October. So I really wanted to get familiar with that cave, that pain, that deep dark spot, just so it didn't seem like too much like a shock, like in the middle of Cocodona. It's kind of like one of those things where if you hadn't experienced it in a while, and I truly believe this, if you haven't experienced the pain cave in a while, even if you've experienced it before, sometimes it can feel a little bit like a shock when you're experiencing it, you know, in the middle of an ultra marathon. So I wanted to like get in that position. So the way that I recreated that was racing the Istria 110K as it follows. Is number one, I looked at the race and I said, okay, I'm going to do a full week of training the week beforehand, which I put in about 100 miles, which in terms of time, because I actually go by time. I know I keep saying the miles, but really when I look at my training schedule, I always go by time as well. Pulling up good old handy dandy Strava here. And let's see. Let's see, time. So the week before, I did about 15 hours of training with about 8,000 feet of elevation gain. Actually, 16 hours of training, sorry. 16 hours of training with 8,000 feet of elevation gain and then 100 miles on the dot. So it was a pretty big week of training before. So I said, I'm going to do a pretty big week of training before. And then the week leading into the race, I was also going to, you know, do some volume. So I did about, you know, a hour and 20 minute easy run on April 1st. And then I actually did like a pretty spicy tempo workout on April 2nd, which like was a pretty big workout in terms of time and intensity. With some hills and everything like that too. And then I did like a little bit of a shakeout run for an hour on April 3rd. So I wanted to get that tempo workout in to have a little bit of beat up legs. And then I knew I would have to get on a flight on Wednesday. And then I think like total travel time was like, God, including like the car ride after, like, I don't know, 18 hours of travel, which was bananas. So we did 18 hours of travel. So we left Wednesday from Phoenix at 11 a.m. And I mean, actually, really, we got into the Uber at 8 a.m. to get over to the flight. So we were there even earlier. And then we landed in Italy, in Venice, at... about, yeah, 11 a.m. the next day, with the time change as well. And then we had to drive like 2 hours to Croatia. So it was a pretty long travel thing. And on the plane, I did not get a lot of sleep. I was trying to tie up a lot of stuff beforehand, and I never really sleep well on planes, so it was super tough to do so. But all that being said, I knew it was going to be really fatigued from that scenario. And then even so, like the race, like we arrived on Thursday and the race was on Saturday. So in terms of the jet lag, like there was just no chance for buffer and, you know, getting acclimated in there as well. And so I knew that I was going to like pretty much go into this race cooked. And my whole intention was to go into the race cooked so I can get there. But how that looked from an actual racing perspective is I said, okay, for the first half of the race, the first half of the race, I'm just going to take it easy. I'm going to take it easy. I'm going to take it super simple. I'm going to take it nice and easy, like no pushing, just taking it casual and not worry about my placement, not worrying about competing, and just take it casual. Then once I'm at the halfway mark, which for this race for 69 miles, pretty much about like mile, you know, 35, 34 ish, I'm going to run pretty hard. I'm going to run pretty hard and I'm just going to give it my all and going it into there as well. And this kind of plays into the mental strategy that I'll talk about. This is where I start to activate it and getting it in there as well. And basically just run really hard. And the whole kind of point of this was like, when I'm running really hard at the end, I wanted to simulate that deep, you know, 200 mile part at Cocodona to really dive into and work through this the mental game of getting it through. And there was a strategy that I deployed that I, you know, keep alluding to that I'll bring up in this podcast that I deployed that was super, super beneficial. And boy, did I go in the pain cave, and boy, did I conquer the pain cave with the strategy. And I'll be using this at Cocodona for sure. So that was like the intent and the strategy to get over there and my whole game plan for Istria 110K. So that is what we had drawn up and how we did it there as well. Now, a little bit about before we recap the entire race, a little bit about Istria 110K real quick. So it's super, super beautiful. And Istria is, when you think about the country of Croatia or look at it, there's like the inland part, which is very famous where people usually go. It's where they have like the Game of Thrones castles and everything like that. Like I think Dubrovnik is the, like the main thing. Dubrovnik. I think that's like the place with like Game of Thrones and stuff like that. But, I don't know. Is that the most popular place in Croatia? I'm looking it up. You'd think I'd know this. Croatia. Come on, Croatia. Yeah, Dubrovnik, Zagreb, these are like really like famous places in Croatia. Those are like inland. Like if you go east into Croatia, like that's like more the inland kind of spots, or I should say the eastern part of Croatia, so to say, not inland, but eastern part of Croatia, which is very, very prominently famous due to where people go in Croatia. But Istria, it's a very lesser known island to Americans. It's a pretty popular European, vacation spot, but it is the peninsula on the western side of Croatia, and it's a Mediterranean peninsula, and has a lot of like old towns and old beach towns and just like a beautiful, beautiful place. But inland, it has like tons of mountains and beautiful, just green forests and amazing, amazing pastures and these little like old cobblestone towns that are like on top of these hilltops that are just like old and have been around for so long and very, very small in terms of the population there. And it's just a really historic looking place inland. And then on the coast, there's a ton of these, little small like coastal towns that have like a lot of shops and boats boats and beaches and just beautiful, serene place. So Istria is just really, really unique place in that category. It's a lot of place where a lot of Americans don't go to tourist too much, but Europeans will go there as well. It's actually very close to the coast of Italy. Like, so we actually flew into Venice, Italy, and then we moved in, or we drove 2 hours to Istria where we were staying. So as you can see, it was pretty close from there, but it's a beautiful piece of place, like very underrated in terms of, you know, what I was kind of expecting out there, which was amazing, and just super, super cool. And the way that the race works is it starts in, for the 110K specifically, it starts in a little town called Buzet, which is a very, very small town known for finding truffles, so which is super, super cool, but it's a small little hilltop town. And what you do is you do like a loop around one of the biggest mountains in Buzet. So you climb up the mountain and then you do that little loop, you hit the top of the mountain, and then you come down the mountain and come back into Buzet. So you do like a little 20-ish mile kind of loop up a mountain in there as well. And then so once you do that loop, then Buzet is east of the coast. So you go literally straight west towards the coast, like towards the coast. And as you're going to the coast, like you actually summit mountains and you go into these like hilltop mountain towns where all the aid stations are. So every single aid station was in a small little cobblestone mountain town, which was just the most epic thing ever. And it was so, so cool because you would summit a mountain and then you would come down the mountain, and usually you would come down into one of these towns, and it was unreal. Like, I'll talk about just like my experience with that, but it was super, super cool how each of those aid stations were in those historic little towns. And then as you're going towards the coast, you basically keep going and then you finish at the coast in a town called Umag, or they call it Umago over there. And it's on the water. It's super beautiful. And it's just crazy. So the race is just, I mean, it is mind blowing just how diverse and how beautiful, because like you're in the mountains in this like very remote spot, like overlooking like the entire, like, you know, peninsula. And then you're coming into these like small little cobblestone towns that brings you back to reality, but also transported back in the time because they're so old. So it was just like a rad experience race in and itself. So that's kind of the layout for Istria. It has, you know, just under 14,000 feet of elevation gain. I'm looking at the stats from Strava. So my Strava clocked 68.88 miles and 13,753 feet. The biggest climb is right off the beginning in Buzet. So you kind of do a massive climb like right off the start, then you kind of bomb it downhill. And then basically, like, there's not a lot of flat running in between. There was like a lot of, it basically just went up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. And then once you get to mile 53, it's just straight downhill from there. Yeah, it was super, super, super cool from that perspective to, you know, basically like just have that experience out there, which was super rad. The climbs in the second half were super steep, way steeper than I expected, which I'll kind of talk about, you know, in this podcast. But nonetheless, it was that's kind of like the lay of the land of Istria 110K here. Now, getting into the race itself and everything like that. So my whole thing with this race was obviously I wanted to, you know, test out the pain and the suffering, but I also wanted to test out this new mental strategy that I talked about. And because like for me, like thinking about Cocodona, and I think this is very good for you to think about when you're thinking about your next race, is trying to have as many mental tools in your quiver as possible, or in your toolkit, or whatever analogy you want to use for storing a bunch of tools, whether it's a quiver. I guess you're not storing tools in a quiver, you're storing arrows in a quiver. I guess if you're using the strategies as arrows, and then you're using a quiver. If you're using as tools, use a tool belt. Insert whatever analogy you want. You want to have as many mental tools in your toolkit as possible. And the longer the distance you are training for, the more mental tools that you want to have, because here's the reality. There is going to be some times where, you know, you try and use a mental strategy and it might work for a little bit as well, or it might work for most of the race, but you might hit a point where you're either going to hit diminishing returns, or your brain, it's not going to resonate with as much, and you need to like switch those things as much as possible, or when it gets ineffective to that prior strategy that you're using, so you can have it as well. So like for me, I've been trying to get as many mental strategies as possible, because over the course of 250 miles, I know I can't rely on the same thing over and over again. I'm going to have to switch it up and do those things as well. So I always say, try and get as many mental strategies as you can possible, whether that's mantras, whether it's visualization, whether it's telling yourself jokes, whether it's really tapping into your deep why, whether it's micro goals where you're breaking in one to another. Like, having a bunch of mental tools in your toolkit is going to be so, so useful, because you're always going to be able to have that in there. Like, I'll even give you an example. Like, one of the things that I use mentally that helps me is music. I use music very strategically in a race where I don't listen to music the entire time. I use it when I need a pick-me-up or I need a push. And I did that in this race, but there was, and that's not the game-changing mental strategy, by the way. It's one that I have been using, but I know that there's a certain point like where music just doesn't do it for me. Even in this race, like there was a point where, you know, the music was really helping and it was really allowing me to tap into some things. And then, you know, I started listening to music and it just, you know, I shouldn't say started, but I continued to listen to music for, you know, several hours. And at a certain point, it just wasn't doing it anymore. And that's normal. And so that's where I was able to like really deploy another kind of mental strategy that really, really helped as well. So try and get as much mental strategies as possible in your toolkit. And the one mental strategy that I did here was something that, you know, I had conceptually feel like I had tried to do, but I actually read a book that helped me to do this strategy into effect. And I'll break down the whole strategy on here. I'm even going to do a whole podcast on the strategy too, but I'll break it down once I deploy it. But my whole kind of process on this was to deploy this at mile 35, 36, you know, once I kind of got into the mode where, you know, I can really get this into it as well. And so I'll break down that strategy once we get to it in the recap. But anywho, that was also a big thing, was like trying to deploy the mental strategies. Also wanted to test out my nutrition, which I've been using NAC nutrition, which has just been a game changer because it has protein and complex carbs and a lot of other things that I haven't been taking in my prior training blocks that have been really helpful for me into this as well. So I wanted to really test that out for the long haul. And just see how it went out there. So let's get into this race recap here of the Istria 110K, the play-by-play, the meat and potatoes, the whole story into here, packed with lessons as well. Let's get right into the whole kind of takeaways from here. Hey everybody, just wanted to take a quick break in this episode because I partnered with a company recently that has just been a game changer when it comes to clothing and apparel that I'm wearing on my long runs. And the one thing that I get frustrated with when it comes to running gear or apparel in general is when it doesn't last long. Whether it rips, tears, or just wears away, it sucks to have to keep buying new stuff. Plus, doing that isn't sustainable for the planet. But I recently started trying this gear that lasts long, has a 5-year guarantee, is super comfortable, has extremely fun colors, which is so important, right? And helps to support clean water programs around the world. The gear is from John G, and you gotta check them out. They make high performance running apparel such as shorts, tanks, shirts, jackets, and more, all built to explore the world on the run. Not only do they have a 5-year guarantee where they will replace any product that wears away, but their stuff is super comfortable, breathable, and easy to move in, especially in the winter months when you're bundled up a ton. Plus, 2% of their sales go towards nonprofits working on viable clean water solutions, so it's a way to give back and feel good about where your money is going. They have super bright colors and artwork designed by talented artists all across the world, so you'll stand out on the trail, which is, like I said, one of the most important things. My favorite products have been the Transit Tech Short and the Run All Day Tee. I like the Transit Shorts because they're lightweight, easy to move on my runs, especially when I'm climbing hills or doing faster efforts, because they don't have a liner. And when you don't have a liner, I feel like you can move around a lot better when it comes to doing these faster efforts on the trail. And I love the Run All Day Tee because it feels like you're barely wearing anything out there, which keeps you really, really cool on a hot day and doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed on a cold day as well. So it feels like you're not wearing anything that's holding you down. So I 100% suggest you try out John G's clothing. And if you're looking to test drive it, you can get 10% off your order when you use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at johng.com. That's spelled JANJI.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly. Use code EverydayUltra to get 10% off your order. And if you're rocking John G in your next adventure, let me know and hope you give them a shot. Go to johng.com and use code EverydayUltra. All right, everybody, let's get right back into this episode here. All right, so race morning. Race morning started at 7 a.m. and this was on Saturday. Now, we were staying south of the race in a little town called Rovinj. And the reason why we did that is because I actually traveled out there with my wife, and we wanted to be a little bit more around where you can see, you know, more things, so to say. So Buzet and Umag, while they're amazing towns and they're super, super beautiful, we were doing some research, and, you know, we found that a town called Rovinj, which is south of Umag on the coast, there was much more popular things to do over there. It was a little bit more of a popular attraction for different things to do and stuff. And so on the Friday before, when we were there, we wanted to explore a lot more. So we stayed a little bit more in that area, which was about an hour away from the race itself, which, by the way, the day before the race, like, I did not, you know, I always suggest, for the most part, the day before a race is getting off your feet as much as possible, chilling, relaxing, you know, not doing anything really too much, just kind of keeping it real. But, like, we walked around a ton on the Friday before. Like, we traveled to, I think it was three different coastal towns, and we were just walking around all over the town. I was on my feet, like, for a lot of the day, and we were walking around and doing all this stuff. And so I was already putting in the time on my feet well before the race as well. And again, it was in the spirit of the race too, to say, like, I didn't want to go into this fresh. So yeah, it's totally okay for me to walk around and do all this stuff as well. And also too, you know, being in Europe, I truly believe that, you know, if you want to experience life, sometimes one of the coolest things to do is, you know, experience it while you're there, right? If you, you know, this is my first time traveling internationally for a race, but I've traveled to other places for races too, like Hawaii and, you know, California and all these different kind of places as well. And I really think if you're traveling for a race, like, make the time to go and see the place too. Like, don't just always make it about the race. Like, even beforehand, you can optimize it to say, like, this is about the race. And then afterwards, we can go ahead and, you know, travel and kind of, you know, explore and all that stuff as well. But, you know, for me, I didn't want to, you know, just make it all about the race and just chill the entire time and, you know, not get to see, you know, the beautiful peninsula of Istria, because that was a big thing too. It's like, you know, it's like the quote, when in Rome, but for this one, it's when in Istria, right? So when in Istria, you know, go out and, you know, we were seeing all the sights, eating all the food and everything like that too. And, you know, really just enjoying, like, the time in Europe, because, yeah, you know, when the heck are you going to be in Croatia next? So really experiencing those things. So I think one of my biggest tips is, when you are traveling for a race, is, you know, make some time, if you can, you know, time permitted with, you know, PTO and all that stuff, like, make some time to see the place that you're in, because it's super cool to explore, you know, different places and, you know, getting to get that experience out there. Like, make it a vacation, which is just, you know, super rad and fun. So that's what we did out there, and we did that the day before. So so that night, I think, you know, I got about, like, 6-ish hours of sleep or so, which, like, for the total over the past, like, 2 days was really, like, 7 hours of sleep, because I slept, like, an hour on the plane, which was not ideal, and then 6 hours on the plane. But again, the whole intent was, like, getting into this thing sleep deprived and jet lagged and everything like that. I remember waking up for that the morning of that race, like, just beat tired. Like, I woke up, you know, like, when you wake up in the morning and, you know, your eyes are just so heavy and your head's heavy and you just feel like it's just gonna be a very heavy day of you know, whatever you're kind of taking on. That's what I felt like when I woke up. So I woke up and I said, you know what, great, like, this is awesome, this is what you signed up for, like, this is exactly the intent that, you know, I've kind of taken in there. And it was powerful, because, like, generally, like, I've had some times where, you know, I've had a race where I really wanted to go out and perform really well. And, like, when you wake up, like, super tired, it can kind of almost be like a little bit of a bummer. You're kind of like, oh shoot, like, this is not good. But, you know, I think what can help is, like, reframing your perspective to be like, oh yeah, like, I get to do this today. Like, I get to go out and race in the mountains and race on the trails and have, like, an amazing experience. And, you know, getting to lean into that a lot more can help. In my situation here was a little different, because, like, I wanted to go in feeling very tired, but even so, like, what it helped me is, like, dude, I get to race, like, you know, 70 miles in the mountains of Croatia. Like, this is going to be rad. It's going to be so cool. So that helped to get me, like, super, super excited. So I got dressed, I got ready to rock and roll, and went out to go and in the car out to the race itself, and got ready to rock and roll. Now we get to the place, and it's like the starting line is there, but it's a very small town in Buzet. So not a lot of things going on, but there's a ton of people there as well, like, waiting and all having a good time and all that kind of stuff as well. And so got out of the car, and I remember really having to go to the bathroom. For the sake of not being graphic here, I had to go number one, not number two. I just had to just pee really bad because I had just been drinking a ton. So I was looking for the bathrooms and was able to go to the bathroom. Now, I promise this is relevant here. I went to go to the bathroom, and as a part of like my pre-race kind of routine, I usually will take caffeine in the morning, and then I will essentially try and go to the bathroom, number two, to let it all out. And I totally suggest, you know, one of the best ways that you can get yourself to do that before a race is to take some caffeine if you are taking caffeine before a race, and just giving yourself ample enough time to go. So that was going to be kind of the strategy that I went for on there. So when I woke up in the morning, I had a NAC bar with caffeine, which has about 65 milligrams of caffeine. And then I had a cup of coffee as well, which was, you know, another 150 milligrams of caffeine. So I was like, okay, this is going to be good. This is going to be great. I got it through my system. We are ready to rock and roll. And, but for some reason, like, it was just not happening for me that day. And I think when I think back on why this happened is because when I think about, and again, for the sake of not being so graphic here, but my schedule was pretty regular based on my home time in Istria. So like where it was my normal time back home, that's when the time to go was showing up when I was overseas in Europe. So here I am in the bathroom, like praying to try and, you know, do what I need to do, and nothing's happening. And so that was kind of the first time that's ever happened to me. I have always, in all my other ultras in the past, been able to go beforehand, but I knew that it probably just wasn't happening. And so I said, okay, as a last ditch effort, I'm going to go inside the cafe. I'm going to take another espresso shot and see, you know, if something can happen here. So went in, took another espresso shot, and waited for a little bit, and nothing was coming out. So I said, okay, let me make sure I got some wipes on me. Let me make sure I got some toilet paper packed with me just in case something happens. And for me, I was going to take a caffeine pill around mile 20, but I decided to hold off a little bit on that and say, okay, I'm going to kick it a little bit later. I mean, I just took a little bit more caffeine now, so I'll be okay. But I wanted to kick that a little later just in case the caffeine would have spiked it. And I knew that once I got to about the mile 32 kind of point in the race, it's going to align like close-ish with like my regular schedule back home. And so, basically, like my whole point of this is not to just share, you know, my bathroom kind of stories on here. It's just being prepared in case these things happen in the middle of an ultra marathon. I get asked this question all the time, like, how do you, and usually in private, because usually it's a taboo subject, but hey, you know what? We're going to talk about poop here for a second. The big thing to do is you want to be prepared as much as possible. So try and go beforehand if possible. Use caffeine to get it out. If it doesn't get out, make sure you are carrying wipes or toilet paper with you, and make sure you're being strategic with when you use caffeine, because like caffeine can trigger that stuff out there. And so just being strategic with when you use the caffeine to, you know, intake it close to an aid station is very, very useful, because usually aid stations will have bathrooms or porta potties, or, you know, in some cases like designated areas where you can go to the bathroom. So being sure to do it before then, so you're not like just like clenching for dear life for so long, or having to like go out in the woods, or, you know, just worry about making a mess or anything like that as well. That is a very strategic thing. And then packing wipes or toilet paper just in case. And then also packing a Ziploc bag too, to put the wipes and the toilet paper in as well. So you're not like, again, from environmental perspective, do not leave your crap that you're wiping yourself with out there. Take it with you. But you don't want to just have that just out in the open in your pack. That is disgusting. And people are going to hate you because it's going to smell really, really bad. I'm kidding. They're not going to hate you, but, you know, it's definitely going to be concerning. But nonetheless, like making sure you have that in there is going to be super, super important. So just plan, if you don't end up going beforehand, making sure that you're planning your caffeine accordingly and just packing stuff with you. And I would even say, like, if you might, I think there's always times, and I'll talk about even in this race, I did it too, like where you can like kind of feel like it's there, but like you don't have to go. If you do, like try and go so you can just get it out, so you don't like wait it too late. I think one of the biggest mistakes I ever made was when I did my first 100 miler in Zion 100, which, by the way, is this weekend. Tomorrow, as of this recording, I'm actually going to be pacing one of my athletes, Cody Mandel, who's racing, going for his first 100 mile finish. So it's going to be super, super cool to be there with him. I digress. But at that race, like, there were some times where I felt like I had to go, but I didn't have to go. And I told myself, okay, like, I'll be good. Like, I don't want to waste the time and everything like that. And I remember I did that, like, right after leaving an aid station. And I went through this whole section fighting for my life to hold in the stuff. And it was so uncomfortable. And, like, my stomach hurt so bad. And it was just such a dumb move. And I remember going into that next aid station and just wreaking havoc. And, you know, if I were to do that again, I would 100% would have tried to go at that moment where I had that initial feeling. And so, anyways, little poop break there, talking about poop, but that is kind of like a big thing to think about as well. So I told myself that's the plan. Didn't get too worked up about it, and went on the start line of Istria 110K to rock and roll. I went into the front, but I told myself, I was like, do not go out hot. Do not go out hot. You are not competing. This is a training run. And like my mantra for the first half of the race was, this is a training run. 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 Because I knew that I was going to be behind. I knew I was going to get passed. I knew I was not going to be in the lead pack. But that wasn't the point. Like, the point there was not to compete. The point there was not to, you know, play specifically high, which usually in a lot of races, like, I usually do. But really, the whole thing is run my own race. And, you know, listen, it can be very hard. Even if you're not, you know, competing for a specific place in your race, to, like, get discouraged when people pass you and stuff like that. And I'll kind of talk about how I went through this. But in the end of the day, I truly believe the best thing to do is just run your own race, even if you're competing, and that can just help with the mental thing. And just like reminding yourself that when you are feeling a little behind or people are passing you is a really good thing. And I'll give an example of this in the race as well. But I was at the start line and ready to rock and roll, and just excited to be out there and ready to go into the mountains. And what's super cool is they had like this like Croatian drum line, like doing some music and like banging around and just doing like this cultural kind of celebration right beforehand, which was just super rad, because it's like, wow, like this is a cool touch of being in another country and ready to rock and roll, and was super, super cool. Now, right before the race went off, I was like looking around, and I was going to take poles with me. I had my poles with me, and I had, you know, the intent of taking my poles and dropping them off after Bouzet. But then I later found out that, like, you had to, if you took poles, you had to carry them with you the entire time. And my reasoning, like, what was going through my head was like, okay, like, I might need poles on this first section, but this next part where there's, like, a lot of ups and downs and everything like that, like, and there's a lot of downhills, like, I don't use poles on the downhills, and I don't want to be carrying this around. I didn't have a sheath or, like, a belt with me that I can put it, so I'd have to, like, put the poles in my hand. And at the last minute, I said, you know what, I'm just going to go without poles. And the reason why I did that was because I'm not going to be using poles for a lot of Cocodona. I'll be using poles for the climbing sections, so namely Crown King, Mingus Mountain, Sedona, Eldon. Like, I'll be using poles for those sections, but a lot of like Cocodona is actually like relatively flatter, and I won't be using poles for those sections. So I said, okay, I'm not going to be using poles too much of Cocodona. Let's use some practice for not getting poles there. But as I was at the start line, I'm looking around at everybody. Like, I'm literally the only person there without poles. Like, I don't think I saw anyone else except for maybe Janosch, who won the race. Janosch, he's an incredibly talented runner, top 10 at Western States. He ended up winning and getting the course record, running just an insane, insanely awesome race. So congrats to Janosch out there. He didn't have poles, but I looked around and pretty much every single other person had poles. So I thought, I was like, okay, like either this is like a European thing, like of having poles, which it is, maybe I shouldn't be taking poles out here, and there's something I don't know. But I said, you know what, I'm sticking with my decision, trusting it, and that's totally fine. So I think, in the end of the day, you know, if you see other people have things that you don't, just again, trust your decision. And if you learn, you learn. If you don't, I should say, if it goes well, then great. If not, then you learned. And that's kind of like the big lesson on there. But I told myself, don't get worked up about it. Don't get worried about it. You made the decision. And again, this is my race. This is not for anything else. Let's just go after it. So also too, what was super, super cool was I was at the starting line waiting, and someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, Joe," and I recognize the person. I said, "Oh, what's up, man?" And this person, his name is Martin, super, super amazing guy, which Martin, if you're listening to this, man, so awesome meeting you. But Martin came up to me and, you know, he had DM'd me on Instagram, you know, mentioning that he listens to the Everyday Ultra podcast and has gotten a lot on it, a lot of info on it. And, you know, we had sent some DMs to each other in the past too. And he came up and he's like, "Hey, man, like, it's so great to meet you." And, you know, we were just chatting and just, you know, just sharing things and, you know, sharing stories. And I was asking like, "Hey, what are you training for? Like, what are you racing for?" He was telling me his goals, like how he's going for a Boston Marathon qualifier and he's racing like another 100K coming up soon. And just was super, super cool just to get to know him a lot more. And his energy and his passion was just amazing. And he was super kind. He was also from like Slovakia, which was super cool too. And, you know, just first of all, like so cool to see the Everyday Ultra podcast reaching so many people, across the world, like not just the United States, but the world. And so, it was just awesome to just chat with Martin and get to know him more. And, it was great. So we were just chatting. So Martin, shout out to you, man. Like it was awesome. Thank you for coming up to me, which by the way, if you ever see me at a race, you know, whether we're racing together or whether I'm just there, like, please come up to me and say hello. I love meeting listeners of the podcast. I love meeting anyone. So if you ever stumble across me at a race or anything like that, please come up and say hi to me. Even if you are seeing me on the middle of a race course and we're doing the same race, like, please say hi. Like, this stuff, like, I love it. I want to give back to the community with this race. And just seeing listeners in real life to me is one of the most rewarding experiences and just so freaking awesome. And I love hearing your stories and where you're from and what you're training for and answering any questions that you have. Like, seriously, like, it is the most amazing thing. So if you ever see me, please come up and say hi. I love it. I'm not bothered by this at all. I really, really do love it. So don't ever feel like you're bothering me or anything like that. Like, I am always, always just wanting to meet listeners and stuff. So it's so cool, like Istria, to meet a listener of the podcast, which is amazing. So I also met my friend Tina too before, who was racing the 110K as well. And we had been DMing on Instagram for a while back, and Tina's an awesome runner. She's going for the Triple Crown later this year, which is just super, super rad. And yeah, and I got to meet her right beforehand, really briefly too. And she is also from Europe as well. So it was super, super cool to get, you know, a sense of the listeners and meeting people like who I met, who, you know, come in through the podcast from a worldwide basis, which is just, you know, just such a humbling and honorable experience. So yeah, I appreciate you for listening. I appreciate you, Martin and Tina, and making that happen. So seriously, much love and thanks to you both. So anyways, I'm at the start line. We're ready to rock and roll, and the gun goes off, and we are starting out the Istria 110K. And I'll never forget this, but like literally, like as the gun went off and I took my first step of the run, like immediately I had that feeling in your legs where they're just so heavy. You know, like when you go out on a run, whether it's like the day after a long run, or maybe you just had a long week, or maybe you took some time off running and you're going back to it and your legs just have that like lead, super heavy feeling where it's like the legs are like, we are not fresh and ready to go. That's what I had on the very first step. And I remember thinking as soon as that went off that I was like, okay, like now this is time to, it's time to dig deep. This is going to be a good training run for Cocodona. And like a lot of people were going out like pretty fast. Like, I mean, sub 8 minute miles, like right off the bat. And I just remember just having them go. And I just remember kept telling myself, I was like, this is not a race for me. This is not a race for me. This is not a race for me. This is just a training run. And just letting like tons of people just go ahead and just continuing to go on an easy pace. Now for me to gauge like the easy intensity and pace for me, all my gauge was just going off of my perceived effort. I wasn't looking at pace. I wasn't looking at any of that stuff. Really for me, it was like, I just want to be at a conversational pace throughout the first like 36 miles of the race. And, you know, not really being able to, you know, being huffing and puffing. Like that is not where I wanted to be. Like I told myself for the first 36 miles of this race, if I start to huff and puff, that is where I'm going to peel back a little bit and, you know, get it to a place where I can get to an easy breathing, which is where I wanted to go for. So you start going through the roads of Buzet and you start like climbing into, you know, the climbing out of the town and going into the mountains, which is like super, super awesome. And so I start just being super easy, super controlled, just not even letting it in and just like taking in the sights. And I think like one of the best ways to kind of like get out of your head in the middle of an ultra marathon is just, and I'm not saying I was in my head, but you know, there's a lot of things going in, a lot of thoughts that are popping into my head being like, your legs are definitely not fresh for this. Like, you're about to run 68 miles. You're super tired. Like, you are letting all these people pass you. Like, of course, the brain's throwing all this negative stuff in my head. But in that moment, it's not getting to me because I'm like, okay, this is all what I expected. Like, I'm not letting the ego, I'm not letting the negative voice in my head, like, get to me. And I think, like, that's really the big thing that I always suggest in any ultra marathon is, like, anytime you have negative thoughts pop into your head, realize that they are not your thoughts. It is just your brain trying to keep you safe or trying to protect your ego or trying to do something to try and knock you off kilter because it feels like something is threatened, whether it's, like, your physical being or whether it is your mental being or your identity or anything like that. And I say that very importantly on the identity piece because, you know, for me, I've always identified as someone who likes to compete and likes to place well and everything like that. And, you know, sometimes like when your identity gets threatened, like your mind will try and like, you know, try and go against it, which by the way, this plays into the mental strategy I'm talking about later. So I know I keep teasing it, but it's coming. It's coming. I'm telling you. Your mind will do whatever it takes to keep you aligned with your identity. So being that this was a race that I just did not quite frankly give a shit about results and I wasn't here to compete. My brain was, you know, trying to keep me into that. And I said, no, you're not going to get this to me. Like you're not going to get to me. This is a training run and I just kind of had it in. And by the way, where I was going with this before I kind of got off a tangent is one of the best ways to get out of your head, especially early on in an ultra, is taking in the sights and the views of the race that you're going at. So as we were going through this like cobblestone town on these roads, I like looked out and you can see like the valleys of Bouzet and just how beautiful. And there was this layer of fog that was just like overlooking like the, or just hovering just so slightly like over the town. But the mountains were emerging. And I just remember looking at that and being like, oh, this is so cool. Like we get to play in these mountains. Like this is amazing. And, you know, just leaning into the stoke of the race helped me to ultimately just not let any of those like mental thoughts get to me. Easy to do early in a race for sure. But I also think another thing too is what has really helped me throughout my ultra career and something to suggest is like, if you have those thoughts coming on super early, for me, it was less than a mile in, you want to like never put an expectation onto like when those thoughts are going to arise or when pain or soreness is going to arise in general. Because the problem is like when you do that, like if you say, okay, I know the demons are going to start to pop into my head at like mile 30. And let's just say they start popping in your head at mile 10. Like that almost like triggers a little bit more of a downward spiral because when your brain expects it to come later, but then all of a sudden it comes earlier in the race, then all of a sudden, like it starts to like really cataclysmically start to go downhill where it's like, oh man, you're feeling this early. Like, why are you getting these thoughts early? Like, oh my gosh, like, is this going to like, you see how that spiral comes in. Whereas if you just know, hey, these can come at mile 5 or it can come at mile 95. Like it doesn't matter to me. All I know is that they are going to come and I'm going to deal with it when they come arise on the spot. So just having the ability to recognize that these thoughts can happen even at mile 1 and understanding that you can detach yourself from those thoughts, realize that they're not you, that it's just your brain, and then circumnavigate them by even reframing them. But I think early on in the race, what's even better is just lean into the stoke of the race, like the beautiful terrain around you, what you're about to embark on, like the journey you're about to cross, like with your own 2 feet, like leaning into that stoke can really help. Kind of similarly what I mentioned before when I woke up super tired and just leaning into the stoke of the overall race itself. So that was what I did for that first kind of section in there. Now we're climbing up the mountain, and again, I'm power hiking pretty much this entire section just because it was pretty steep going uphill, and wasn't too rocky, but it was pretty steep going up. And you know, I start just trudging along and just power hiking as well, and just keeping the breathing in check. And I was moving smooth, moving good, nothing really to it, just kind of taking in the moments, taking in the zones, and everything like that. And as I'm going up too, I start running with Martin too. Who I mentioned before, you know, we started chatting a little bit, started chatting about Cocodona, started just, you know, chatting about some of his race experiences, and we were just getting to know a little each other a little more and just starting to rock and roll a little bit. Then I remember getting onto a part where it was like, I felt like I was going a little too easy and then I could like kick it up just a slight bit notch. So started to run up some of the climbs where my breathing was still pretty controlled. But, you know, Martin, we split up for a second and we started to continue to move on. At this point, like, then we get to another pretty steep climb because like the first few miles are just like a straight climb up. I start to realize that there's a lot of people passing me. There's a lot of people passing me on the climbs, and But I'm not trying to just get over you or like over worried about it. And one thing that helps me to not get worried about, and this is something that can help you too, is listen to the breathing of people who are passing by you. Because if you are keeping a low intensity in the beginning of an ultra, which you likely should, like you shouldn't be breathing super, super heavy. And what I was noticing was that there was a lot of people passing me who were breathing pretty, pretty heavy as well. And so like, you know, again, I wasn't there to compete, but I did know like one thing that can help me to like really just understand that like I'm executing the plan right is that like, okay, these people are probably working a little harder than me. And it's not something to put them down. It's something more so to ease your mind a little bit more, because if you are racing a smart race, like, and people are going too hard in the beginning, like you should be able to pass them later on. And so something that even I do too, and again, I wasn't there to compete, but I did want to pass people. I actually was chatting with my coach, Joe McConaughey, before them. And Joe was telling me, he was like, dude, I would like, if you were running this race, like you intend to do, like you should be able to pass like 30 people, like in the back half of the race. And so in my mind, like as people were kind of going up, I was just remembering their faces and just being like, okay, like, will I see these people later? Like, let's keep that in the back of my mind. But you know, every time someone passed me, like, I won't lie, like my brain was kind of like, dude, like what the heck? Like you're letting these people pass. But I kept telling myself, this is my race. This is a training run. I'm going too easy. And then even if I heard someone like breathing super heavy, I knew that I was like, okay, I'm not working as hard as that person. And also too, this person might be treating this like an A race and they might be going a little faster, which is different than mine. It's being able to like see like the irrational emotional responses of your brain and trying to correct it logically in the moment, just so you can stay grounded in there. And so it was continuing to stay grounded and kind of going up as well. I'm also realizing that people are moving way more efficiently uphill with poles. And I start to realize, maybe I should have taken poles on this race, but I knew that I wanted to make it harder for myself, and not having poles certainly made it harder for myself to climb up these hills. So again, trying to find the benefit throughout the stuff and linking it back to my original intent of the race, or the training run, so to say, which was also a race. So I guess both is correct in that scenario. But really just finding the ways to ease the mind was super, super helpful. Now, by the way, it was very hot there this year. Generally, this race tends to get temperatures around like the 50 to 60 degree range. On that day in particular, I believe it was like 70 or 75 degrees. So pretty, pretty warm. And we're getting up into the mountains now above tree line where it starts to get like pretty hot. And I remember just like all of a sudden, like the sun was like beating down on me like pretty hard. And generally I do well in the heat, but I was like, wow, like I'm actually feeling like a little hot out here. Like I'm feeling a little toasty, feeling a little interestingly hot out here. So I was like, okay, let me just drink a little bit more water than usual, take a little bit more electrolytes, problem solve on the go. I even had an extra flask with me too. So I was carrying two soft flasks and I was carrying a handheld that I stored in my pack as well. So I was carrying a liter and a half of water on me as well. And, you know, I was spraying a little bit of water on my neck because that helps too, to get that topical cooling. So as the heat's coming up, I said, all right, no problem. Let's problem solve. Let's move on. Let's get to this and get rocking and rolling and continue the climb up. So we're continuing the climb up. And I remember this is like around, you know, mile nine. And, it's so cool. Like you go into like this little small, like I said, just cobblestone town, super cute, super cool. And just like very old buildings, but it's so funny. There was like people outside, like doing yard work and like people outside, like, just, you know, out there rooting and cheering for us. And what was super cool is like, it seemed like everybody, like residents of that small town were out there cheering. And like, what I really loved about this race is that, you know, in the US where, if you've raced in the US before, If you're listening to this in another country, like that's, you know, in the US, what we do is usually when people like see each other, they say great job or like way to go or something like that. What I noticed in Croatia was that a lot of people were saying bravo. They were saying bravo or bravissimo. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, cause you know, I got Italian heritage too. Like obviously my last name is very Italian, and we were going to go to Venice and spend a few days after too. So that was just so cool. Like people were just going bravo, bravo. And like was super awesome just to see like everybody in this small town, like probably like close, it was a, like a lot of people for what I would expect that small town to have in there, just cheering it on and everything like that. So I get into the aid station, And what was super nice is they had NAC there, which is, you know, the company that supports me nutritionally and what I take as well. And so I filled up my bottles with NAC. What's super cool about European aid stations is like they have like charcuterie boards, like they have like meat and cheese and like all this stuff there too. So it was like really interesting to see all that stuff. Obviously, like for me, I'm not slamming, you know, bologna like at an aid station. That's just like not me. If it's you, that's great. Go for it. Like not going to judge at all. But that is some of that I was like, I will pass on the bologna for sure. So anyways, I, you know, continued to move on from there too, and filled up the thing with NAC. What I noticed was that, as I was sipping the NAC going continuously up the climb to the next aid station, was it was a little light in terms of like the mixture stuff. Then, cause I usually will mix it myself and I'll take it out there, but I just got it out of the big canister. And what I realized is it was a little light. I didn't think too much of it. I was like, you know what? Like maybe it's fine. Like no worries. But, in the back of my mind, I was like, this could be a little less calories than what I'm using, because what I plan to do in my nutrition strategy was 350 calories an hour, and doing it primarily off of the hydration mix that they were going to have at the aid stations, just so I didn't have to take too much stuff. I also did take NAC purees. I had a few NAC bars with me. I had tons of NAC waffles too that I was going to supplement my fueling with as well. And then and I was going to total that up to 350 calories an hour. And then one serving of that NAC hydration mix has about 250 calories. And I would have supplemented with either half a puree, which is another 100 calories, or a waffle, which is 140 calories. So in that scenario, it was really 350 to 400 calories an hour, but that was my plan. So I noticed that like it was a little lighter than usual. And so I said, okay, like let's just be mindful of this, making sure that, you know, we're still getting in calories. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to opt for the waffles, you know, that have a little bit more calories as I'm going up there, so I don't be behind on this as well. And also decided to take more electrolytes because there's a lot of electrolytes in that NAC powder, and I wanted to be sure that I wasn't getting shorted on those electrolytes, because that's very important, especially in the hot weather too. So start climbing up, and it was so cool because like there was this guy who was like we were kind of yo-yoing throughout. Like there was like people, like this guy was like passing me, and then he would like, I would pass him, and then like we would just kind of pass each other the entire time. And what's super cool is like, I've always found that like people who you see that, you know, like when you're in a race and like you see someone, you're not talking to them, but you just like respect them. You're just like, that person is doing great. Like that person's doing awesome. Like I respect them. Like anytime he passed me, I was like, dude, this guy, I respect this guy. And so it was cool to like play like a little bit of leapfrog with him. And you know, it's just like, I always like to tell stories about the people who are there, like, and not in like a judgy way, but just like in a fun way. I was like, this guy like looks like he's like a family man. He's out here enjoying it. Like, I don't know what it is. It's just something mentally that just like that allows me to have fun with it. And again, it's another kind of strategy to kind of just do it. But, and again, it's not in like a judgy way. Like I never am like, oh, this guy's like a piece of crap or something. But it's like, I mean, maybe if I'm competing, sometimes I do, but you know, I like to kind of like make these like little stories up and just, you know, whatever. And for me, I don't usually like to talk to people too much when I'm racing, not because I don't like it, but just because I usually like to very much be introspective. I did talk with Martin out there, obviously, and like, Martin, if you listen, wasn't a problem with me. Like, I'm totally good. I remember I engaged in conversation even one time. But for me, like, if I were to have the choice, I like to just stay very introspective. That's just me personally. If you like to talk with people, that's great too. But I think it's just knowing what you like and what you don't like. And so for me, I just really like to be introspective on the runs and just kind of like using it as a time to like be internal and everything. So, you know, I'm kind of having a silent conversation with this guy past me. Now, we're starting to get into a little bit of downhill sections, and I'm getting passed even more on these downhill sections because people are just absolutely ripping it. Now, on these downhills, like, they're not just, like, flowy, like, smooth downhills. Like, they're very rocky. They're very jagged. Like, and if you fall on this thing, like, you get messed up. And I told myself, I was like, go easy on these for two reasons. Number one, from a racing perspective, I don't want to blow out my quads early, which is something very important that you need to also do, even if you're racing, not just in a tune-up race, but in a race in general. If there's a lot of downhill early on in your race, don't always bomb it to oblivion in the beginning. Because one thing you want to be mindful of is the damage that you're going to do to your quads. When they look at the biggest sources of muscle damages in an ultra marathon, it's not flat ground, it's not the uphills, it's actually the downhills, because downhills you're going to have more impact force into your body and especially into your quadriceps area. And so if you bomb the downhills too early and you go really, really hard, you can really shred up your quads very, very badly. And that's going to really cost you on not just like the downhills going forward, but also the uphills and the straights and even just how much, give that you have in those muscles going forward. Like I see this all the time, like Black Canyon 100K is a classic example of this because it's a screaming downhill in the beginning and then it just kind of eases into it at the end. And or kind of gets a little bit more climbing at the end. And a lot of people struggle on those climbs at the end because you just kind of let it rip and free. So I told myself, don't bomb the quads. But also secondly, too, I just saw how jagged some of these rocks were. And I told myself, I was like, if I take a bad spill here and I risk Cocodona because of this, like I'm going to be very upset. So I'm going to take these downhills ridiculously easy. But of course, a lot of other people weren't and just passed me by. And at this point, like now I'm feeling like that negative voice is like starting to really get loud in my head. But again, it's sticking true with it being like, nope, reminder. This doesn't matter. This is my race. This is my own race. I don't have to worry about these things. And in the end of the day, like I truly believe that it's like, if you just focus internally on what you can do and not what other people are doing, that's going to help you to give more locus of control in the situation and ultimately focus on you and not other people in there as well. But this is where I really started getting past on some of those initial downhill sections, after the, climb after that first aid station. Now, now we're summiting the highest point of the race. So it's like not that overall high. It's only about 3,280 feet, but you're starting at pretty much sea level. So you're climbing a lot at this point, and this is right, mile, 15, so to say. And getting to the top of that, mountain was so beautiful. Like when you're in a race and you hit a place and it's just so spectacular that you just like audibly like out loud or just like, oh my gosh. Like I remember breaking the tree line and looking and just seeing the sprawl of mountains ahead and just like the fog underneath and just like these beautiful green, like cascading hills. And it was just like amazing. And I was like, oh my gosh. And even though in that moment, it's like, we've been climbing for a while and I was tired and everything like that. It was amazing. And I think what really honestly helped me to get through that first half, even though feeling tired, feeling fatigued, all that stuff as well, was not only reminding myself that this is a training run, but also just like leaning into that stoke of the race, which is something that I think a lot of people don't do as much. Like it can be so easy to focus on the tired legs or how hard the climb is or like how much distance you have left to go. But it's like, be present in the moment. Look at the views around you. Appreciate it. Take it in. Like soak it in. Like realize the gratitude of the situation. Like that is so, so powerful. Like digging deep and being tough, all that stuff is useful, but sometimes gratitude can be even more powerful, especially early on in the race, because if you kind of get into that like grind and like, let me fucking crush this thing, like right off the bat, like that, if you do that, like if you're on the gas pedal for that long mentally, like it can actually like drain you later on, right? Because like you really want to save that for like the point where you need to push. And I knew for me, like that wasn't the mode for me. It was taking it easy. So I climbed up the hill and just marveled at the top. And I was like, this is beautiful. This is amazing. And what's super cool is like we get to the top of the peak and some guy at the top of the peak, he like looked at me and he goes, "See you in Umago," which is where the finish is. And I don't know why that just like stuck in my head where it's like, oh man, that's so cool. Like we're going all the way to like Umago. Like, and again, just like fueled the stoke of it. Then you kind of have this like big bomb section downhill. Now, by the way, at this point, I'm feeling so hot. Like just the heat is just beating and like you're up above tree line. It's completely exposed. It's like 75 degrees. And, I was just feeling really hot. So I was like trying to drink a lot of water. And what I kind of realized, I was actually running pretty low on water, way lower than I realized. Cause I was like, I'm taking a little bit more water. I don't want to get dehydrated. But I feel like I'm kind of close to the next aid station. And, so I'm doing that. And, I'm taking in the water and I'm realizing that like my water is very, very low. So I'm starting to like skimp on it a little bit just so I don't, run out of it completely. And what was super cool is like on the downhill, you do pass through another cobblestone town. And it was so cool because like there was like a little bit of a water pump like outside of it as well. And I saw like people like this is in some guy's yard and like the owner was out there just like, speaking Croatian to these runners that were coming out and people were just like going in and filling it up. And I remember like getting there and I was like, oh wait, can we like fill this up? Is this drinkable? And I remember looking at the guy and I was like, can you drink this? And obviously, I don't think he spoke English because he just looked at me just like I had five heads. But I said like this, I like pointed to it and then like did like a drinking motion. And he's like he pointed it, like he just gave me a thumbs up. And I was like, oh, great. So thankfully that saved me. Like I was filling up the water and I was just so grateful for that. And it was amazing, but I was still very hot. And all I wanted to do was focus on getting to the next aid station at Bouzette, which was at mile 26. So going down this downhill, the dude who I respect, keeps going a little bit ahead of me too as well. And I'm like, all right, great. So getting to the aid station, mile 26, I'm feeling like definitely tired. My legs are definitely feeling like pretty like heavy, not like sore, but like heavy. And, you know, I get into this aid station. And by the way, this aid station was nuts. It was like in the middle of like a sports center, but it was like a giant like auditorium inside. And there was like cots and there was like tables and there was just like an array of food with like fried chicken and soup and like vegetables and just like a bunch of stuff. And I was like, what the hell is this? Like, it looked like a gym auditorium. I was like, this is fucking nuts. Like, I hadn't seen anything like that in the United States. And so like my mind was just like totally blown. I was like, what in the heck? And so I was like, all right, well, what I need right now is I need to sit, I need to drink a little bit extra water. I need to make this happen just because, you know, I was a little bit light on water in that situation. And I think it's important when you get into aid stations is like assess like what you need at the aid station. Don't just get in there and scramble and everything like that, but do it like right before. And so what I mean by that is right before the aid station, like in your head being like, what do I need to do? Okay, I need to fill up my water bottles. I need to take a drink of water. I need to make sure I take electrolyte pills. I need to, you know, take some NAC from the aid station, like whatever those things are, and listing those out in your head, like right beforehand. Because one of the biggest mistakes people can make is like, you just get into the aid station. You're like, what do I need? What do I need? And you start like thinking on the fly. And then like, you're like, oh, I need this and this and this. And you're like, oh shit, I've been here for so long, and blah, blah, blah. It's having a plan right before the aid station, even giving yourself like, okay, I'm going to take 5 minutes here, I'm going to take 10 minutes here, and really just reassess. I told myself, I was like, I'm going to take a little bit more longer time at this aid station because I want to sit down. I want to make sure I'm fully hydrated. I want to make sure I have enough water for this next section, because the next section was going to be pretty big. It was like 10 miles and there was like a few like, you know, climbs in that section. And I was like, okay, this is the biggest stretch between aid stations. And I'm going to have to push like in the middle of this section to the aid station, because like the next aid station would have been mile 37, which to me was going to be go time. And, I was like, this is the time to do it. So, I sat there, I took care of myself, and I truly believe that if you can take, you know, a few extra minutes on an aid station to take care of yourself, that can save you hours in a race. And so for me, I sat there, I drank a few soft flasks of water, took a little bit of electrolytes, made sure I took some food with me, made sure I restocked my stocks. I also took some Play-On. I sprayed it on my quads as well, just so I can be ready for the next section ahead. And I said it was great and ready to go. The one thing that was just interesting was like, a lot of people at the race did speak English, but it was a little tougher at some aid stations. So at this aid station, they didn't speak English. And I remember, you know, because at this point too, I knew I was going to be close to taking caffeine on this section just because I was getting close to the point where I was going to push. And I wanted to make sure that I had some extra wipes just in case. So I like went to like someone, I said, hey, like, English, like, and they were like, no, don't speak English. And I was like, oh, like, do you have like wipes? And I started like making a motion. And it was obviously, you know, it was hard to kind of understand. So what I did was I actually like pulled up a picture of like wipes on my phone. And I said like, oh, like, do you have this? And they were like, oh yes, we have that. Like, you know, in their language, I'm assuming that's what they said. And they went through and gave that to me. So I said, oh great, that's going to be my strategy now, is I'm just going to like pull up the picture, and if I need something, I'm going to go to them and show them that. So it's a good tip to use, you know, if you aren't familiar with the language in places that you're racing, is like maybe get a pictures of the things that you need on your phone and showing it over there, assuming you have service. But what I found was, and I don't want to make this as a blanket statement, but a lot of people did speak English for the most part. So I didn't find too much of a difficulty on that as well. Anyways, so get out of the aid station, and it's really hot coming out of that thing. It's hot, and like I was just in this like super cool room, like with like big AC and stuff like that, and start running out there. As I'm kind of running out there, I'm running flat. Like I noticed that I'm like starting to like pass some people, and I'm like, oh wow, like I think I passed like three or four people coming out of the aid station, because it was just on this like flat road, and a lot of people were just walking out of it. Because I can tell probably a lot of people got smoked on that section because of the heat, probably running out of water. I would assume maybe some people didn't realize that they could have filled up at that person's house. I don't know. It was just very, very interesting just to see that. And so I started to notice that. I even saw some people who I was like kind of keeping in the back of my head, like, oh, like I'll probably pass them later, which is super, super cool. And so, that was absolutely rad. And so it was a good little confidence booster to be like, okay. And I remember being in my head at this point and just like already feeling tired, already feeling fatigued. And I was just like, okay, like where am I? And I pulled up the like tracker to see like where I was. And this was like right after the booze at aid station. And I'll pull up like the actual stats in there as well. But as I was pulled up, I was expecting that I was maybe around, 30th place or something. Coming out of that aid station, I was 77th place. And I remember in my head being like, damn, am I really that far back? Like 77? But again, another signal like where your brain can like put you into flight or flight. I was like, nope, we're not going to fight or flight. This is okay. And guess what? You're going to move up places and this is where you're going to push. And I remember just feeling that. And I was honestly feeling a little disappointed. But again, it's all around reminding yourself. Like, I think, it's super interesting. And I was thinking about this out there is like the concept of like meditation, right? When people think about meditation, they often think about being like clearing your mind. But really the practice of meditation, if you've done it before, is you are breathing, like Vipassana meditation, which is a specific type of meditation. Like the practice of it is like you are breathing. And once you notice that you're like, well, your whole focus, let me back up a second. The whole focus is being on your breath, is just focusing on your breath. That's really the practice, is just focusing on your breath. And what's going to happen is your mind is inevitably going to wander. It's going to inevitably wander. It's going to start thinking like, oh, what am I going to do for lunch today? Or what are some things I need to do? Or like, it's just going to start to like think about whatever. And your mind will wander. But then you have to recognize that your mind has wandered and then redirect your focus back to the breath. And the point of meditation is not to silence your brain, but it's the awareness that your mind has wandered off the target and then reorienting your focus back onto the target. And I truly believe that that's a great, great thing to do in ultra marathons, because you have a target, you have a goal, whether it's to get to the next aid station, whether it's to hit a certain pace, whether it's to hit a certain cutoff time, like you have a goal. And sometimes like our mind can wander into other places with the negative voice that's coming in as well. But you need to, first of all, recognize when your mind is doing that. And then two, you need to make a conscious effort to reorient your focus onto the goal. And it's going to be hard, just like meditation. The longer you go, like I've done meditation bouts before, right? And in full transparency, I haven't practiced it very, very fully, like over the past few like months. But I used to do it very, very religiously. It helped me at a time when I was going through sobriety, like really just trying to get sober. But there'd be times where I would meditate for like 30, 40 minutes. And like the longer that it got, the harder it became to focus on the breath. And I thought that was just so powerful, just from like an ultra marathon perspective. And so I always take that into account, that it's like, it's not that you're trying to like get rid of the negative thoughts. It's not that you're trying to get rid of it. It's trying to recognize when your mind is going that and then reorient your focus on the goal. So for me, this was a constant process of recognizing when my mind is going nuts, reorienting on the goal, not worrying about the external situations, and keep going forward. Now, what was super interesting is like right after this part, I was thinking it was going to be pretty easy home free. Cause if you look at the course profile, I have it pulled up right now. You have like your giant climb coming into, before Bouzet. And then you have a giant descent into Bouzet. And then there's kind of these like rolling hills coming into it. Like when you look at the elevation profile, it doesn't look too bad on that second half. But I remember that climb coming out of Bouzet was pretty gnarly. Like it was a pretty gnarly climb. It was like pretty steep going up, very rocky, very muddy, just like crazy conditions. And I just remember just being like, wow, like this is kind of wild and nuts. And like, but I said, you know what? Like steady rolling. Now, what was interesting is I started like to pass people, and I don't know what it was inside of me, but I told myself, I was like, you know what? Let's give this a little bit more push a little earlier than I had expected. I was like, you know what? Like, I think I'm ready to dive into the world of suffering. And this kind of goes into the mental strategy that I was talking about. So I was like, it's time to deploy the wolf. It's time to deploy the wolf. And this is getting into that mental strategy that I think everybody is on their feet waiting to hear all about and to deploy it as well. So when I say unleash the wolf, this goes into the strategy that I'm talking about here. And this whole strategy revolves around being the best version of yourself. And the one thing that got me so into this was because what I've noticed, and I'm sure that a lot of people other notice this as well, is that sometimes when you are in an ultra marathon or you're in that part as well, we all have this like thing inside of us. We have qualities that are a part of us that maybe don't serve us in the best moment, like when we're out there, right? So I'll give you an example. Like if you are out there and trying to compete at an ultra marathon, like sometimes, you know, if you are like a very kind and compassionate person, like you might, you know, not want to like get into that like dark place, like where, you know, you need to like dig deep and get it done and like push through and making it happen, like out in the middle of a race. Like you might have those, that quality that's like a little bit more kinder. And I don't mean be a dick out there, but if you're out there trying to like, you know, compete and be the best version of yourself and like, you know, not wanting other people to pass you because you want to like be the best in terms of like the results that you want to get on that day, you might be a little bit more kind and compassionate towards other people and not wanting to like bury them or anything like that, right? Which again is fine, but if that's your intent to like go out and really compete well, and you are a very kind person, which is 100% okay to be, sometimes, you know, in a competition, that can be a little bit detrimental. And it's not, again, being a dick. It's just more so sometimes people will say like, oh, I don't want to pass that person, or I don't want to bury them because like, you know, I want them to have a good time and stuff like that, where that goes against the goal that you want. Or here's another example. Maybe you're all about like self-care and you're all about like preserving yourself and you're all about that stuff. But, you know, in the end of the day, like you need to like really dig deep and get through the dark stuff and get through that painful moments. And I'm not saying injury, but just get through like, you know, general muscle fatigue and soreness and stuff like that. And that part of you might come in and say like, oh, like we're going to take care of ourselves here a little bit, which again, I'm not saying like, you know, push yourself to oblivion, but I truly believe that like, you know, sometimes I think we can push a little bit more than what our brain kind of registers or kind of tells us to do in that scenario. And sometimes like if we're, you know, very mindful of those things, we can like ease off the gas a little bit. My point is this. My point is that like sometimes we can have qualities in our life that show up in a way that don't help us in an ultra marathon. Or also too, like, let's just say like throughout day to day, and like I will even like say this on here too, like I do deal with anxiety at times and I do deal with like things popping through my head from a day to day basis. And, you know, I can, you know, get in my head at times. And I've noticed that sometimes in the middle of ultra marathons in the past, you know, those qualities can come into play too. So I've always like tried to ask myself and trying to like find this, like, it's like, how can I show up in this race as the best person that I am, like the best qualities of me, like in the moment as well. And that's where I stumbled across this whole powerful concept of tapping into an alter ego, tapping into an alter ego. I learned this concept from a book. It's called The Alter Ego Effect by Todd Herman. It's an excellent, excellent book. But basically, this was a concept that I had done very loosely, and a concept that you probably have done before in your past, if not in ultra marathons, at least as a little kid. And what this whole concept is, developing an alter ego that essentially brings out the best quality of you, but you step into a role that ultimately is going to allow you to perform the best in this moment. And if you think that, you know, this is a crazy concept, this has actually been seen by a lot of successful people in business, in music, in entertainment, in sports, right? And so I'll give you some examples. Like Kobe Bryant, when he was on the court, he would step into his alter ego as the Black Mamba. Beyonce, when she first started off her career, she had an alter ego of Sasha Fierce. Eminem, he also had his alter ego of Slim Shady, right? So Jerome Bettis, so running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, his alter ego was the Bus, right? So you step into this alter ego, and this alter ego allows you to be the best version of yourself because you step into that moment in the thing. Now, it's not pretending to be something else. It's not pretending to be all those things, but that's essentially what it's kind of like. And so like, if you imagine as your kid, right, when you were a kid, right, and you saw your favorite cartoon character or your favorite, you know, superhero, right? And you, like, I remember like being a kid and pretending that I was Spider-Man, and like, I remember feeling like I was on the top of the world because I was Spider-Man in that moment. That's essentially what you're doing in the middle of an ultra marathon when you create an alter ego that's super powerful for you to deploy in the moment so you can ultimately ultimately go out there and be the best version of yourself. And if this sounds woo-woo, if this sounds crazy, let me tell you, this is also backed by scientific studies. And there was actually a study that they did a while ago where they took two groups of children. They took two groups of children and they gave them a set of complex math problems to try. The one group of children, they just told them, go out and solve this math problem. The second group of children, what they did, they said, go out and try this group problem, but pretend that you are your favorite superhero in this moment. So the first group went through and they just tried to solve the math problems on their own. The second group, they pretended that they were Batman or Wonder Woman or Superman or any of the sorts trying to figure out these problems. And what they found was that the group that pretended to solve the problems as their favorite superheroes, they were not only able to be more successful in there as well, but they were shown to be more resilient. They didn't give up. They didn't fold under pressure a lot more than the first group did in it as well. So the whole point is that, you know, basically when you step into a version of your alter ego, whether it is, you know, imagining that you are Superman or imagining that you are this alter ego that you create, you can truly tap into the qualities of that alter ego, which are the qualities inside yourself to be the best version possible. Now, the catch to this is that you need to come up with an alter ego that is going to be most resonant to you and the qualities that you want to envelop as well, right? And whether that is like Spider-Man or Superman or maybe just this fictitious character that you made up yourself, like you are stepping into that fully and you need to create the alter ego for yourself in a way that resonates with you. And so for me, my alter ego, and I'm sure if you're a fan of this podcast, you've heard me talk about or have seen me, you know, put wolf emojis like on different things and put wolf emojis, you know, in my Instagram posts. And even when I did the Javelina 100 recap, I said, hey, if you listen to this full thing, please send me wolf emojis, right? And the reason why I did that was because I've always resonated with the wolf, right? The wolf, the animal, the wolf. And the reason why is because there's twofold things in the wolf. First and foremost, the wolf is designed for endurance. The reason why the wolf always resonated with me as an ultra runner is because the wolves are built to have very enormous stamina. Like their way to hunt is to keep running all day long to tire out anyone that they're hunting, right? So they're able to outlast their prey by running long. Like they're not like the cheetah where it's like the cheetah goes fast and it's very swift and everything like that. Like the wolf is ultimately the one that's built on endurance. And so like for me, like I've always thought about like, I might not be the fastest person, but I can go for long periods of time. And I think the wolf is something that embodies that quality so, so much. And to me, like that's like a quality that I want to develop when I'm in an ultra marathon is being able to go for long periods of time, hunting out my prey, whether it's the prey of my mind or whether it's the prey on the field in terms of the other people I'm competing with. But the wolf has always resonated with me. But secondly, not only is the wolf built for endurance, not only is it ferocious, not only is it something that is, you know, a cunning warrior, it is also a very social animal. So when people say lone wolf, that is actually a misnomer. They aren't very lone animals. They are very, very pack animals when it comes to, you know, being in communities and having a pack, right? And that's why when you hear like wolf being, you know, the wolf pack and things like that, it's a very, very social animal that does things for the sake of the pack a lot. And they live in social groups and they live in those packs. And ultimately, like they work together to hunt, to, you know, survive and everything like that. And for me, like I've always came from the thing, it's like, yes, I want to be a cunning warrior, but I also want to do things for the sake of the pack, right? And the pack to me is everybody listening to this podcast. It's the ultra running community. And the reason why I go out and my deeper why deep down of why I do what I do is because I want to inspire others to really go out and be the best versions of themselves by putting myself through situations that challenge me to go to greater heights. So like I've always loved those two qualities about the wolf, and I've just like embodied that in everything that I've done. And so for me, like that was like, oh, like it was always my alter ego, like in a way, but I hadn't like formally named it and I haven't formally like stepped into it fully, but I've always said like, you know, I like to identify as the wolf out there. If you see my past 2 years of bibs for Javelina 100, like it does say on the bib, the wolf, and that's the reason why. But then when I read this alter ego effect, I realized that there's one step that you can do to kick it up a notch. And for me to create the alter ego and for you to create your alter ego, like you really want to go through a two kind of step process, because there's another part of the process that's not just developing the alter ego, but it's also developing the enemy as well to your alter ego that you can kind of create onto this as well. So I'll go through like how I did this. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to part one of this episode. Part two will be released next Monday, this upcoming Monday as well. So be sure to stay tuned for the next part of the Istria recap, where we're going to go over the alter ego effect, how to implement it, how it worked well in my race, and then the conclusion of how Istria 110K went. So thanks so much for listening to part one. Part two coming soon. And remember, my friends, be a better endurance athlete every day, and we'll talk real soon.